Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
All right, guys, welcome into Unpaved. Adam Sager, I'm Sean Salisbury. You can catch us both, Adam G. Sager on Twitter, me at Sean Unfiltered, Coach JB at the Real Coach _ JB in just a couple minutes. Grateful to be with you as we head into the new year. Hope your holiday season and Christmas was awesome, Sags. Hope you enjoyed it, brother. And I know you probably stayed up putting Christmas gifts together at Santa Claus. If there was a screw and a bolt left over, it's okay, Sags, with young kids. That's normal. We all do that. We're the bike, just as long as it's not on the wheel, right? On the training wheel that you left it off. We'll hear from Sags in just a second. So much to cover. A phenomenal weekend. Some crazy-ass stuff in football. The national championship, as we move a step closer to that college. That's why we have this show 5 days a week. It'll be three this week, but why we have 5 days a week. Because you can't cover it all in one day, but we will hit the stuff that needs hit. And I'll start here with my wrath or my passionate open. It's about Kyle Whittingham. Listen, this is and two of my favorite hires with Kyle Whittingham and Lane Kiffin. Known them both a long time. Kyle longer than Lane. And I think both are great hires. The reason I preface this and qualify this is I don't play favorites when it comes to this. Kyle Whittingham was my host when I went on a BYU recruiting trip because he was playing there and showed me around. And I've known Lane Kiffin since he played high school football. His dad, Monty, legendary, should be in the Hall of Fame if we had assistant coaches. Used to go watch Lane play high school football. Love them both. And I think you can love more than one when it comes to coaches you love. As players, we can only play for one team, so we got to love that, or recruits and the rest of it, at least for the time being. You can eventually play for three if you want. But let me start here. Of all the hiring cycle, of the entire hiring cycle we've gone through so far, college and NFL, right here, this is the best hire. And you say, what are you talking about? That doesn't diminish or shrink how good a Lane Kiffin or how good somebody else is at their program. Or, you know, if you love James Franklin going to Virginia Tech, doesn't. I'm talking about sustained consistency, doesn't deviate from the plan unless necessary, meaning adapt and adjust, but his rules, his philosophy has not changed. If you want physicality, nobody teaches better than Kyle Whittingham. If you want the poster child for what Michigan football, Bo Schembechler, Jim Harbaugh, has always looked like, it's Kyle Whittingham. But the greatest thing about him, even though he's physical and wants to control the line of scrimmage and dominate you and be tough, the one thing he's been able to adjust all his years, because he played at BYU and knowing, listen, BYU was doing the stuff that these teams are doing in the NFL and college football 40 years ago. It's just a different label, a different wrapper, different players, and we call it different because, well, they were running spread long before spread was even it. It's just named different. Kyle Whittingham was there with Lavelle Edwards and Roger French and Norm Chow and that group, Jim McMahon, Stephen, that whole group. So he understands that you have to have some finesse. This is a great hire by Michigan because he's bringing what, if you say what Michigan's supposed to look like in the dictionary, this guy's face and name will pop up. It's a great hire because he's been consistent at a program that doesn't get 5- and 4-star recruits consistently, and he's won with them. What's he going to do? I firmly believe if he's there through the 5 years or 6 years, Michigan will win another national title because had he been at Florida or LSU or Alabama or Georgia with Kirby Smart or Nick Saban, I mean, had he taken over for those programs, they would have won a national championship. He's always flirted with it, been a conference champion. Now he's got a different resource to get to. And I knew damn well when he was done with Utah, you never heard retirement. It was from everybody else. And I remember texting him and he said, we'll see what the next opportunity is. not talking about coaching, just opportunity, which told me he wasn't close to the door on. This is a phenomenal hire. You want consistency, you get it. You want adaptability, you got it. You want a guy who's tough and has proven it. He played that way and he's coached that way and not deviated from toughness and physicality wins. But you better find a versatile quarterback. He's got that at Michigan. This will be the most gifted player since BYU as a teammate with a Steve Young or a Jim McMahon. This is the most gifted player he will have ever coached at that position. He's got that. And he's got money and he's got a recruiting base and he's got a conference to play in. This was the best hire when you combine it all. Maybe not flash, maybe not social media presence, but when it comes to a guy who does everything that he preaches and lives it, Kyle Whittingham. I fully expect the Michigan Wolverines to win a national title in his regime there because his access will be far different than he's had. And if you want a guy who shows up to work every day and does it every single day and doesn't miss work or expect his team, he knows they're going to play hard, so he doesn't give them that compliment. He gets it. There's not a guy in the cycling hire, this area, this hiring time, this cycle, NFL or college, that has done more with less than this guy has at Utah. And that's not to diminish Utah's good players. They always have high draft picks. I'm talking about overall. This is the best hire this recruiting coaches cycle, hiring cycle, Segs. I'm a full firm believer in it. When he was out and a free agent, you wondered, well, is he just going to be a family guy now? Just hang around, and he's always been a family guy. And he's taught that to his program, to his players. And he knows how to coach young players and guys who've been on church missions and come back, how to deal with that. This is, when you talk about no baggage, straightforward, and respected by NFL guys and college guys, like find somebody who said something bad about Kyle Whittingham. You won't find it. This is if you're talking about going from one extreme to the other about what they've gone through controversy-wise the last few years, Segs, and now bringing this guy in, you aside from great football mind, and he will hire, whether, you know, Utah and BYU coordinators, when he puts his staff together, it will be formidable. This is the best hire in the coaching cycle, I firmly believe, this offseason because of his consistency and his attention to detail and his ability to adapt away from just being physical. He understands that finesse is still going to have to be a part of it. He represents exactly what Michigan and Big Ten want their football to be like. And I'm sure you're pretty excited being it's your team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm very excited. The main thing is he brings stability to the coaching position there at Michigan for at least the next 5 years. I think he'll be there probably a little bit longer, maybe a second contract, but he just brings stability. And the Michigan fans looked it up. He doesn't follow any OnlyFans models on Instagram or anything else. He follows his wife, his daughters, and I think that's it when it comes to women. So we're good there. But yeah, it's a great hire. It's a hire that we talked about, that soon as he left and walked away from Utah, we said that would make sense for Michigan from the stability standpoint. And I mean, let's face, ESPN had him as a top 10 coach going into this past season. So we know how good of a coach he is, and you give him these resources that Michigan has, and it should work out very, very well in Ann Arbor.
And you talked about stability, and we're going to get to JB right now. The stability of him, and you mentioned great family guy, you know, it comes from a tough background, his old man, coach's son, all those things, and they all matter. And Michigan's always known for physicality, but he's even going to take their mental and emotional toughness to a new level because that has been who he's been. He's had to coach his way through. Okay, I'm not as talented as USC, but I can beat him. So with this, and he's going to have, you know what it is, Segs? It's like you wake up on Christmas, you get all the gifts you want. Now you go to Michigan and there's a few extra gifts that you didn't expect that Santa Claus delivered. And that's like a certain players that you just wouldn't have had access to at a school. Utah's a great program, but tell me what Utah was like before Kyle Whittingham was a coach. You can't because you don't remember, right? Some is my point. Hell, Segs, damn near most of your life, he's been the coach at Utah. So the point is the stability matters, but it's not stability where it's stubborn to the point he's not willing to change. It's the stability every program needs. Michigan, physical always, they'll be known as as tough a program as there is in the country. Yeah. We hear about Georgia when Saban was at Alabama. This will be as physically, emotionally, and mentally tough as any team in America. Let's get to JB. Get right back with Segs in a second. The real @TheRealCoach_JB on Twitter. JB, welcome in. Just overall, JB, you've dealt with Kyle. You've had guys, I'm sure, that have gone and played for him. You know the reputation. Coaches you respect. This is top shelf all the way through, brother. There's nothing not to like about Kyle Whittingham.
Nah, just his age. It wasn't probably the splash hire Michigan was wanting, but they waited it out. They could have went expeditiously and hired a guy right away to save the portal and save their roster, or they could have waited it out and got the right guy. And I think that's what happened here. I want to ask you something, Sean. I said it on my show. I don't know if we're setting a bad precedent with this whole Instagram look up my followers act. To me, that shit is getting overblown. I think Sharon Moore, everyone's going to say, well, his DMs or his character? No, they're not. Because what I do in my personal life has diddly shit to do with you. And at the end of the day, it's actually a violation because freedom of press actually exists. You can't sue a media or a newspaper outlet. You know that. You know how hard it is to do so because you're protected. Freedom of press has, actually protected for that reason. Same thing. You fired Sharon Moore for having relations violating decorum policy. Fine. But now they've literally ruined this dude's name because of the Instagram and the social media that came with it. There was nothing illegal he did on social media. And people are, I think we're going to take this, and I think this is going to set a bad precedent, man, because I can give dilly shit. If you hire me, guess what? I got naked broads. I got OnlyFans. I got it all. You know why, Sean? Because guess what? The kids resonate with being hip, having a relationship, and understand the kids. Like, oh, coach, you. These guys got to stop. This is a 66-year-old married man with, of course he's not following that. But let's be honest. If you want to get the kids today, you better be hip, and you better have a relationship. I think we're setting a bad precedent. Are we going to check everybody's Instagram now, Sean, every time we hire somebody? Did you check?
Yeah, they are.
Did you check? No,
they are now because, and you're right, they are now because he's dating a young girl. She's obviously of age. No doubt. And privacy's privacy, but you knew they were going to go 180 degrees different what they were used to with Michigan, JB. Because they just couldn't risk the optics. This is, it's all optics. You're exactly right. Other than when you slide into my DMs, JB, when you and I are, be group text, right? You and I, Pat.
That's my burner. That's my burner.
Oh, it is? Oh, my bad.
They call it burner. I always ask something, Sean. I said, oh, yeah, JB, is that your burner? I said, what the hell is a burner? I said, I say the same shit on my real account, don't I? Like, why would I need a burner?
Not only that. You don't even need it. It's not even on your real account. When we bring you on or when you and I are doing a show together,
the one you're familiar with is called Meat, right?
Yeah, Hot Meat. There you go. But with this, the thing about it is, JB, is I think for the thing with him is that reasons they opened it up is because married, campus, messing with somebody, you're the subordinate. Is it against the law to mess around with somebody in the building? No, it may be against Michigan protocol and the rules they have, entitled to do that. It may be against, having an affair with somebody in the building against it. It's the precedence that sets that what message are you sending? So that part of it. And we saw Tiger Woods go through this in a different way, not a team, but in golf. Everybody felt like Tiger Woods owed them an apology. I'm not encouraging cheating on your wife, but you are exactly right when it comes to the privacy. But with Michigan, they had to go 180 degrees difference just for optics and recruiting and all that. But, and whatever their protocol is, if they say it's like a player dating a cheerleader, well, they frown on that. Well, does that mean they're a bad guy? No, maybe somebody fell in love with the cheerleader. In this case, on campus, subordinate, in the same building, all those things, and you're married. So I get that part, which opens up the can of worms to think that they're allowed to invade your privacy away from what goes on in that building or on a company email. So you're right about that, but the optics of that were the big problem of that. But moving forward with Tiger Woods, JB, remember everybody used to say, well, he owes me an apology. No, he doesn't owe you a damn apology. You're not his marriage counselor. He owed his sponsors that paid him on their, their morals clause, the PGA Tour, his family, and his whoever else he felt in that circle. He didn't owe me an apology. I wasn't looking at Tiger Woods that time for marital counseling, and neither are you. But everybody felt now if you're coming across as a guy and you're endorsing Nike and they say, well, we prefer it this way, and you break, then that's something you got to deal with them. And look at Tiger Woods' comeback. Everybody holds him the highest regard and the rest of it. So we want to tear people down and then build them back up and tear them down and build them back up.
John, I wouldn't even apologize to sponsors. You know how much money they made off his name? Well, shit, no, exactly. They should be apologizing to him. Shit, what does his personal life have to do with anything about his sponsor? Nothing.
As long as it doesn't affect his job or the school or the company, you're right. And you know what else, JB?
Cancel culture.
That's exactly right. And optics, and we got to do it right. Yet half the people that are canceling people or that did this or that with Tiger Woods, they don't want you looking into theirs. They don't want you doing that. So, because guess what? The same ones that they're saying, well, you can't do it, are the same ones that, man, I'm judging somebody else on that. The bottom line, I don't think anybody would have cared had he had done this, even though they may have said, what are you doing with a wife at home? But because it happened to somebody in the building, it was, you know, that gives you cause. So as we move on from that, but I think you do agree, this is a great hire by Michigan, considering even though age-wise, he's still pretty cool, and I think the players are tuned into him, and he's used to dealing with veterans, and maybe he won't have as much turnover as some universities do. All right, let's get to the NFL, JB. The division you trust the least as we head to the playoffs, a division that you say they can't win a playoff game.
The division or team?
Division. Like the AFC, the NFC South. We got a couple teams in there battling for the division win. You got the AFC North. Yeah, the AFC South. The NFC South. The AFC North. You can name them. Who the hell? You may, maybe you don't trust the, you know, the NFC East. I don't know. But with that, is there a division you say, I don't care who's going to the playoffs, I don't trust them getting that far in the division? I think the obvious, we know who that is, probably in the NFC, but is there one that you think that they just aren't going to win a game no matter who it is?
I think the Niners are one and done.
Really? Yeah, they're battling for the division championship next week, and they're playing great offense right now, JB.
Their defense is horrific, Sean.
It is.
And they lost Trent yesterday. I don't know how this team – Shanahan, what he's done in the regular season this year is coach of the year worthy, no question about it. I don't believe it's even close, in my opinion, what he's done with this roster and being in this position. I just think Brock Purdy, as good as he played yesterday, is still a bus rider when the lights turn on brightest. And when the playoffs require my quarterback – to get us over the hump when we have a Kittle banged up and a McCaffrey banged up and really no wideouts but Jennings, who's really a third guy on most rosters, I think it's going to all cave in on Brock Purdy, and it's going to be too much, insurmountable, because I don't believe he's that guy. As good as he played yesterday.
You still don't trust him? You still don't trust him, JB?
Now, if you give him some wideouts.
What's missing from his game?
I think help is what's missing from his game right now. I think he has lack of it on the edge, and I think it's how DCs are in the NFL playoffs, John. They're gonna pin his ass in the pocket, and they're gonna say, "Oh, really?" And we're gonna bracket Jennings because you have no other wideouts. And if Kittle ain't full go, Sean, then guess who their second leading wideout is? McCaffrey. Now I gotta take him from the backfield to the slot and try to create mismatches, which Shanahan does well, and try to get him isolated on a safety or a backer. Well, guess what? That's taken away from the run game that's going to save Brock Purdy. It's not going to help him by putting him in the slot and now drop back in empty protection and throw the ball over the park. That's not going to win a playoff game for the San Francisco 49ers this year, not with this banged-up roster and without having that defense intact. I think they're going to have to score 35 points a game in the playoffs to win, because they're not going to hold down the Rams. They're not going to hold down Chicago again if they play. They're not going to hold down even – Seattle, as we know. So we're going to see that game this week for all the marbles. But I don't know, Sean. I think the Niners are one and done. I think the Bears are one and done. I'm curious to see, you know, what the Packers are, because after yesterday's just unbelievable defensive performance in a game that mattered, I can't believe that. And I'm not a believer in the Ravens or the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sean. So the AFC North to me is dead as well. So this is a bad, you know, kind of watered down product this year, because the AFC West was so good for so long. I think they beat each other up. I think this could be a bad outcome for the NFC West because of how they have to play. Last game of the year, Sean, mattering like this, when they should be kind of hanging out, chilling, is going to hurt them in the playoffs, in my opinion, because they're going to go all out, balls to the walls here next week to win this, to get that one seed for the Niners, and don't have to leave the whole season. Super Bowl's there. So this is all for the marbles, and I don't know if that's not putting it all out there. And the Rams have the easiest left remaining schedule, and I don't know. it's not in Sean McVay's bloodline, but well, shit, they've secured it. Why not tank for the last two games and go to the seventh seed and play and go and beat Frisco right out the gate? Like they own Frisco in the playoffs, just so we're clear here. You can beat them in the regular season, but McVay owns Shanahan in the playoffs. So I'm curious to see what this happens tonight with Atlanta and next week with the Arizona Cardinals.
Three teams in the NFC West that all believe they can win the whole thing, but have all, you know, have a weakness at some point, whether it's injury or performance or defense. With that, JB, let me then get to – we always hear defense travels. I lean on it, and so do you, in the postseason. Being able to run the football, dealing with inclement weather, all those things. Is this the year offense wins the Super Bowl and not defense, or do you still think the better defensive team wins it?
I think the Texans have the best defense in football. I think the Jags are right there behind them. I think those two teams going against a good offense like Drake May and the Patriots or another good defense in Denver, I think those three defenses, Jacksonville, Denver, and Houston are going to knock each other out of this thing, and it'll be a team like New England or some team with offense that don't have to play one of those guys early because, you know, New England could play Buffalo. Like, it's going to be crazy, right? And Buffalo's defense is horrific. And New England, I don't think, has enough weapons. So it's going to be very interesting in the AFC. I think Houston, Sean, could end up playing Jacksonville in the damn first round and play for a third time. So this is going to be very interesting with the AFC here, in my opinion. But the NFC, I mean, it's very interesting both sides, man. Like, we got two playing games this week. Carolina-Tampa Bay is a playoff game, in essence, and Baltimore Steelers.
And for home field and for the one seed in the West, too. So it's a lot of it exists still.
Yeah, and two are for playoffs. All in, you know, winning, you're in, lose, you go home. So I'm curious to see how this Baltimore Steelers game plays out. I did have $1,000 early on the year as a Pittsburgh Steelers AFC North champ. So that game yesterday absolutely murdered my hopes because I don't know if they could beat Baltimore in the last game of the season, especially if Lamar don't play, because when Lamar don't play, their offense is actually better, contrary to belief, because they're forced to hand the ball where – Lamar's in, and now he can pull the ball and run read option, and it limits Derrick Henry just running downhill. I'm just telling you right now, you get Derrick Henry 25, 30 times a game, they don't lose very many games. So Baltimore is going to run down your throat. I don't know if Pittsburgh can stop them. And what the NFL did to DK Metcalf, in my opinion, is egregious because we've seen far worse and less suspension, especially when it comes down to a game like this. Aaron Rodgers is sitting there with a sitting duck. He has no weapons. And then you're in 30 personnel with three big tight ends that can't stretch the field vertically. You didn't even have Austin. And now you're trying to get your back the second most touches on the in the game yesterday because you have no wideouts, and he's your best pass-catching receiver yesterday as your running back. I don't know what Pittsburgh can do, Sean, to be honest. I'm rooting for Tomlin. I'm rooting for Aaron Rodgers at 41. I don't know if Pittsburgh has enough in them as well as they were playing the last four games. Now to lose that yesterday was just an inexcusable loss.
Right. And they're so weapons shy. It's a hard watch offensively. Even with DK Metcalf, they are still weapons shy. And if Baltimore commits to running the ball like they did yesterday, where that's their centerpiece, look out. Derrick Henry looked like he was 25 years old again. Can I make a case that Drake May has bypassed Stafford for the MVP award?
No.
Why not?
Stafford's by far, it's not even close. Stat-wise, Stafford's killing him in. And Eric Weddle brought up a great point. Who's New England beat? One team over 500. The Rams have beat seven.
I think it's Stafford, but some are going to argue with it, right, JB? And I think he might throw the ball – There's not three other guys outside of Stafford that throw the ball better than Drake May as far as spinning it pure passers in this league.
No doubt. And the Jets, look at that game yesterday. The Jets gave him more opportunity. That, like, if anyone's going to be fired, and I'm kind of leaning towards you with Pete Carroll and the Raiders situation, Aaron Glenn's one and done. My eyes work. And you could, if you fired Mayo after 1 year in New England, guess what they got? Vrabel. Pretty good looking. It's pretty. 13 wins from three wins to 13 wins this year, right? So
no matter who their schedule was, JB, no matter who.
I think it worked out. the Jets have to think in similar fashion. Listen, Saleh wasn't great wins and losses, but that Jet team was competitive. They had talent. They were there to play every week. This is not that team. And I watch Aaron Glenn, and I like Aaron Glenn, but I watched that Detroit defense, and it was the most unsound defense I saw, and he was the DC. I don't know. He got the job because he played there, Sean. I get it. But he is not a head football coach, and my eyes work. I've watched the Jets specifically more than any team in football because I have two players on the team, and they are bad in all facets, and that's head coaching. And if you're a defensive guy, you can't be this bad on defense. And I don't care. You got rid of Quinn Williams and blah, 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 blah. But guess what? They were bad when they were there too. So, like, this wasn't like that was the only thing. He's a defensive coach, and I think that's number one glaring issue because you better go get a hell of an offensive coordinator and you better go get a quarterback, and you didn't address either one, and you basically had Aaron Rodgers fly out there to tell him, I'm going to go in another direction. You can do that on the phone. And I believe that was where it all began. Not that Aaron Rodgers was a savior, but he was better than what you got right now. I'll tell you that.
I'm looking hard at the Raiders and Jets for one and done in both of them. I'm evaluating the coaching position extremely hard if I'm those two organizations. Regardless of my respect for both, I never saw 1 ounce of improvement from either team this year. Matter of fact, I think both got worse this year than the previous year, regardless of record. They did.
And I know I'm void
of a lot of talent, too.
I'm with you. If you're a defensive head coach, because I made this point, offensive head coaches right now with the young and upcoming athletic quarterback are the ones that are thriving. If you're a defensive guy, you better be able to dominate on that side of the football as the head coach. And look at Houston Texans. He's one of the guys that at least he's defensively number one in the league. Guess what? He's a defensive guy. If you go look at McDermott, though, who's a defensive guy, I believe he's failing Josh Allen and that team because you don't got the offensive guy, Joe Brady, for whatever reason, or you just didn't get the weapons for Josh Allen. Either way, though, your defense is horrific, and you're the defensive head coach and head coach. So yep. McDermott, I have a funny feeling, man. This could be on his he's been a great guy and all that. I get it. But he could be on his way out too, man, if this Buffalo Bills team is an early out.
What would you have gone for two last night in that situation at home?
Nope, absolutely
on
not.
On the road, maybe. On the road, I would have given my team a chance at home to get a stop and to go down because they were on a roll, JB.
Fucking analytics shit, man. So
to me, on the road, if you're exhausted, I get it.
That's the rule.
I don't want to hear that at home. That's right. That's exactly right.
We got to stop going against the rules.
100, it wasn't 98 degrees and 90% humidity. It was cold. You were fine at home. I'm forcing the other team to go the distance and do it. I'm going to get another possession in overtime regardless if they get the ball and go score. And the way we were playing, I would not have gone for two either. I thought it was a major coaching blunder that took the game right out of your hands. I hated it. Now, the guy was open. Allen's got to make that throw. He is, even though he escaped left, you've got to make the two-point conversion throw. But I would have kicked it, and I would have played for overtime, and I would have given my team a chance because we were on a six-minute roll, even though we didn't play well most of it, and I would have given my team a chance to win it there. I think that you took it out of their hands. I don't like that, and I hate the analytics.
Here's the number one thing. Again, back to my point, aren't you a defensive head coach and a head coach?
Yes. Trust your defense.
How many fucking yards did Jalen Hurts throw for in the goddamn second half?
Oh, dude, he was – I don't think he had 10, did he?
Zero, Sean.
Yeah, there you go.
0 yards passing.
Which you're is hard to do, JB.
He did it twice this year, Sean. Jalen Hurts did it twice this year. Sean, let me ask something. If I'm the defensive coordinator and I'm the head coach and my whole thing in this world and getting me in this profession is I've been really good on defense, correct? That's where I kind of got my calling. So I became a head coach because I was really good as a D coordinator, and I've been around, and I've been a linebacker guy and a DB guy. I've been with some great coaches. Don't you know what's going on the other side of the ball on the offensive side of the opponent you're playing? And doesn't that carry momentum in? If Jalen Hurts has 0 yards, the Philadelphia Eagles couldn't move the football, why would you not kick that ball and go into overtime at home?
You took it away. You didn't give them the best chance to win. And that's your number one job as a coach, put your team in the best situation to win. I'll tell you why else I was bothered by this. Philadelphia's offense was non-existent in the second. The defense, Buffalo's defense doesn't play well very often this year. Dominate.
Right. Yeah,
that
right.
Second half, they were playing as good a football as they played. And you have a supermanic quarterback that we know what he can do when he gets rolling. You've scored twice, put yourself in position. And you literally, because I don't know, you got to be home quickly, and you're at home. The road team usually, oh, we're exhausted. We got to get this over. We got momentum. We got them on their heels. Go. You had them on their heels. Go out there, get a stop. They weren't a threat to throw the ball. And even if they did score, you still, like the new rules, give you a chance to match. And I would have trusted that my Superman quarterback, my defense would have got off the field, because offense wasn't your defense in that last second up wasn't the problem. Ride that momentum. I thought it was a bullshit decision. And we don't put enough on coaches. It's one thing to do X's and O's and a lead and all that, but I am actually shocked at how many coaches screw up time and clock and game management in clutch situations when you've been in the league this long.
It's just analytical
Even
shit.
As a rookie, you shouldn't make that decision. It's just stupid.
Just analytical shit.
McDermott made the wrong decision. All right, I'll end with this, and it has nothing to do with the playoffs, JB. Have the Browns and the Saints found their quarterback so they won't draft one in the first round next year? Done it since Archie Manning. The Browns and the Saints, have they got their starting quarterback for next year?
The Saints do. I said he's the best rookie in the draft. I said it. I said it on my show. I got the receipts to do it. Shook is the best. I thought he was the best ball spinner in the draft. I know his personal coach at Louisville. I knew he was a guy that was going to be pretty successful. What he's done with New Orleans so far, to me, is the rookie of the year, hands down. It's not even close, but yet we don't talk about him whatsoever.
And even in a shortened season, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Not like he played
for
the whole
him,
year.
Starting.
Yeah, he didn't play the whole year at all. The other one, to me, is laughable. I think he's horrific. I am not sold at all, and I think they're going to trade him some type of way or do something else, but he's horrible. I watched the game yesterday, Sean. Come on now. That's why I said – for the Steelers to lose that game yesterday with that play of Shedeur Sanders, that was a mockery. There's no way he's the future of anybody's team. I'd be surprised if he's a backup. But guess what? The media hype of his last name continues to drive him to be a talking point to either be the quarterback, and if you don't play him, you're screwing the kid and you're racist. And I mean, I'm so over this kid. He is not very good. My eyes work. He throws a good deep ball at times, no question. But other than that, Sean, he cannot make layups for the life of him. And I'm over talking about the kid. Deshaun Watson, right? He has a contract that you can't get rid of. So in Cleveland, Deshaun will be back.
They're going to force feed him the starting job, of course, even if he, right. Deshaun, I'm talking about.
Yeah, they got too much money. So I don't see where Shedeur fits in there. So you could trade him maybe, though.
It's amazing how, and watching it, it's amazing how quickly, and the Saints will probably continue their trend of like 40 years of not drafting a quarterback in the first round. But they have discovered something on a roster that, quite frankly, isn't very good. It's just bad. Not. So we'll see how that goes. JB, great stuff, brother. Hope you had a Merry Christmas, and I know – and a good holiday, and we will do it again. And I'll talk to you away from this show as we roll on through the week, man. Appreciate you as always. At the real coach _JB, he brings it, and you get his show Monday through Friday. You get him in the AM out there, and he's bringing it. JB, thanks. Bring Segs back in. Talking about it, Segs, for me, the weakest division. The NFC South may be capable of an upset, but they have started to flounder as they've gone on division. And I don't trust the AFC North. And going in, you would have thought, man, if Cleveland's defense, Joe Burrow healthy, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh upgraded with Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf. They actually did something the offseason offensively. Oh, Baltimore's got Derrick Henry. Lamar Jackson's always an MVP guy. And now you look at it, it's became a blah, just blah division. So I still trust that the representative can come out of the West in the NFC. And I'm a little higher on Chicago, their ability to win late at times, even though they didn't last night, had a chance. What a great football game. I think Chicago can. I'm a little higher on them, but I still think you're going to have a hard time eliminating one of the three NFC West teams because they all have quarterbacks that are capable. The question is, will defenses show up at the right time for those teams? So probably the NFC West, AFC North are my least confident divisions right now, Segs, when it comes to how far they would go in the playoffs.
Yeah, you mean NFC South. You said West.
What'd I say?
Yeah. Yeah, you said
West. No, NFC West, I'm confident. Yeah. NFC right. West, I'm confident one of those three can. NFC South, AFC North don't move my needle very much right now when it comes to extending themselves in January into February.
And if I think I'm going to throw another division in there, hell, maybe even two, it's the NFC East, because watching this Eagles team is not the same. I don't care. That defense looked okay yesterday and sloppy.
They started
conditions.
To step it up some on defense, but, at least. But
yes,
their offense
they have. They've gotten a little healthier. But, I mean, Jalen Hurts and company are just bad. I mean, it's straight up. They're not good, a good football offense right now. And you could say the same thing about, like, the Houston Texans. But the Houston Texans defense is much better than the Philadelphia Eagles defense, in my opinion. So, I mean, the NFC East and the AFC South. I don't know how much I trust Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence going into the playoffs for the first time. We just don't know what to expect from this team.
And yeah, he showed Texans and made some good throws yesterday too.
Yeah.
I'm with you. You know my feeling on him.
I mean, the Texans are a great defensive team. And they came out through the first those two touchdowns, and then it was like someone turned off their switch and it was like, "Oh, we don't know how to play offense anymore." And they were just putrid the rest of the game. And so it's just, it is a weird year. You and JB were talking about it. It is a weird year in the NFL.
That's for me with the Texans. Going in, I knew their defense was going to be special.
Yeah.
And we had said it before the season even started. At the end of last year when they were playing, I said, listen, their defense is right now, they are as close to being as good a defense there is in the league. They got a great young back end. Their linebackers run. And they got great edge pressure, and they're getting bigger and more physical on the interior, and it's paid off this year. And for flashes of time, you'll see them run a big deep over the top, you know, a big play, and then they'll go three series. You're like, what in the world is going on with these guys? Right. And you can't do that if you run into a team in the AFC. You run into a team like New England, you give them two or three extra offensive possessions, even as good as your defense is, they're going to at least come away with some points and pressure you. And then if you run into a defense that plays pretty good defense and their offense is not as consistent as your offense, that's when the Texans find themselves in trouble. They are on a roll, and they're going to – next week is going to be one hell of a good watch by two – right now you think take the under with those two defenses next week in that game to decide the division.
And that's why I think looking at the AFC, to me, the most dangerous team – and I'm not one, he's played well, and I don't like this quarterback, but Denver. Denver has the defense of the Houston Texans, and they have the offensive coach in Sean Payton that you trust, that's won a Super Bowl, that, you know, gets in these type of games in the playoffs, and you're like, okay, he's going to figure something out to put his team ahead. And Bo Nix has played better than I thought he was going to, especially down the stretch here. But so I think Denver's the scariest team in the AFC. New England, it scares me what Coach JB said. They've only beat one team with a winning record. The Giants beat two. So, I mean, that's got to scare you if you're – but New England –
yeah, if you're a New England fan, you're trying not to look at that statistic because it'll make you get a little nervous. It will.
Yes.
You'll say, yeah. Then I look at it and I say, but I've seen this quarterback make some decisions and throws that it would be good against any team. It's just – you know, the pressure and being able to sit back there and throw it, you're not facing playoff teams, which I'm sure Vrabel knows that. And I don't know if you want to remind your team of that because football is football. You want them to feed off that when you're playing teams you're supposed to beat, they are kicking their ass, which is important to notice. But I'm with you as a fan or a bettor. It's concerning. And I'm with you. I think Bo Nix is better than people talk about. Here's why.
He's
still as accurate with the football. Sean Payton's a really good – he is. But I'm going to tell you the one thing that when a quarterback's not going good, if he's a pocket guy, if he's a pocket guy, you have nothing else to lean on. The one thing I do know about guys that can – and he's getting better from the pocket because Sean Payton knew how to coach Drew Brees, who lived there but didn't have the escapability. The one thing I know about dual-threat quarterbacks, you can still – if you got a great defense, which they do, and you're having a tough game throwing it from the pocket – guys like him can make 9 out of 19, but 5 or 6 plays that make a difference off schedule. And that if you throw an interception, you're still going to get the ball back because their defense creates pressure and does that. So while he may not be the best, one thing I do believe that he can beat you more than one way offensively And his ability to use his legs to extend can be a problem in the postseason. And that's why I'm just not sure, even with New England, that Denver is not the team to beat in the AFC. After watching everything they do, they don't have the best quarterback, but they do a lot of things well.
Yeah.
And that's important in January. And they'll still commit to running it. And he's got the dual threat quarterback who can that can kill you on 3rd and 7 with an 8-yard gain. He's got that ability.
One quick thing to talk wrap up your and JB's talk about the analytics and stuff. He mentioned the Eagles are 3-0 when they have 5 yards or less passing in an entire half this year. They're 3-0 when they've done that this year. They've done it 3 times.
That's not an analytic I want to live by. I can sure as shit tell you that. No. I don't want to live by that analytic.
And then another one, the Packers are 0-3 when they don't punt. So, I mean, that just tells you analytics are getting screwed up somewhere. We've gone, I think, we're too far forward in analytics. I think it needs to be brought back some to more of just the old school thinking. Doesn't got to go all the way back. Like, there's still times where it makes sense to go for it on fourth down and all that. But I think it's gone too far where, you know, the Packers aren't punting, but they're going for it on fourth down from the other team's 47 or their own 47. And it doesn't work out. And then so they don't punt, but they're turning the ball over. So it's just analytics have really changed the game and the way coaches think. And even with the time, we saw stuff last night with the Bears that you could argue that Ben Johnson even said, he's like, I think I kind of screwed up and I'll have to go back and learn from it. And this is his first year as a head coach. He's still learning. And you like to hear that from your coach. Listen, but
the greatest strength for a coach, for any of us, is the greatest expertise we have, aside from experience, good or bad, whether you got kicked in the teeth or succeeded along the way, the greatest experience we have is knowing what we don't know and being able to admit it and get to work, because you can't know it all. Right. I haven't seen a perfect game played ever. Well, Sean, did you see the quarterback had a perfect quarterback rating? Yeah. He threw a completion to the sideline for a 3-yard gain, but he missed the home run over the top. That if that would have been the perfect game for a touchdown, even though he got the completion. So, and analytics, listen, I don't care what anybody tells you. And I'll argue this with McDermott till the cows come home. There was nothing in that situation other than they scored 12 points coming down the stretch in 6 minutes. There was nothing in that that a card would have convinced me to go for 2 points.
Yeah.
Nothing. At home, your crowd, your gig, correct? You're doing your thing. You're struggled. Now you get rolling. Your defense has pitched a really good second half. Yep. They don't throw the ball well. The weather's not getting hotter as it goes on. You shouldn't have tired legs when it's cold out. That's great. That's why we sit in fucking plunge pools, okay, pool. So you're not exhausted and sweated out and dehydrated, even though when you get playing, you get warmed up. I got to trust that my defense can get a stop and that my offense with that guy who's got the MVP label can go down and get me a field goal if we get a stop. I thought that's when, and I don't care what the geniuses from Ivy League schools say, there's a time, the test of time is optics are sometimes better. And the feel is sometimes better than the analytics. Just because a card says, go for it. Oh, we're here. It's a long game. Go for it. You feel they're on their heels. No. The Eagles also, the teams know what's on the line. And he had him. We could say that. Fine. And he missed the throw. But I can also tell you that I like the chances. You give me more chances other than one play. I get plenty of chances in overtime. Get a defensive stop. Get a blocked kick. We win the toss. We go score. We kick a field goal. Then we put pressure on them, and they haven't thrown it. There's a lot of ways to win in overtime. You gave me one way to win in 2-point conversion, and you left it on the table. I disagreed with it, and I thought that it just feels too rushed for me. I'm actually going back. If it was on the half-yard line, different story. Hell, I'm going to do it with Philadelphia. I'm quarterback sneaking it and letting that big fella get in. To me, you put yourself in a bind. And it cost you a game last night. And I don't think it was the wrong thing to do. Analytics have their point. They shouldn't be dominating sports. It's a feel thing, and you got to look into your players' eyes. And I'm sure them all said, let's go for two, but you got to be smart enough to keep players from their own, to keep them out of their own way. Because who wouldn't want it? Yeah, we're feeling it, let's go for it. But you're still not giving your team the best chance to win. And that's the number one job of a coach. Put my team in the best situation to win. And they did not do that with a 2-point conversion last night.
Yeah, and as you said with Coach JB, Josh Allen had him. He was open. He was open by 4 or 5 yards, and he missed him by almost 4 yards.
Yes, he yeah, did. So, bounced it to him.
I mean, it is as good as that was, you had the play there, and you didn't have to get to
open right, one thing. Finishing the play is another. He didn't finish it. That's just the way it is.
Marcus Bath Freeman announces that he will stay at Notre Dame for the 2026 season. He, you know, was up for, we had heard the New York Giants job. Multiple teams were going to talk to him in the NFL. Are you surprised that he didn't at least talk to teams? And maybe he did talk with the Giants because the job's open, but are you surprised he didn't let it play out a little bit more? Or do you like the fact, hey, no, I'm staying at Notre Dame. My recruits know I'm here. We're getting ready to get ready for the portal, which is a big deal in college sports right now. I got to, you know, show that I'm here so my team doesn't suffer at Notre Dame.
Another reason why I think this guy, I hold him in the highest regard. He didn't let the attention and the flirtation play out. He put a stop to it. Now, am I surprised in this day and age that coaches aren't entertaining it or that he didn't entertain? Maybe he did a little bit, but I'm talking about emphatically and play the game. I think in this day and age, we're shocked that people, if everybody's not playing the game. But I'm not shocked at the character of the guy and why he did it. One is, I've said a million times, why would I leave a top 10 historic program? As long as you're alive, as long as he's the coach at Notre Dame, they're never winning five games. Right. They're just not. Okay, schedule-wise, whatever. As we sit now, this coach and this team are not just going to win five. You're not going to see that. They're going to win eight, nine games and be at least talked about all year long, all the time. That's one. It's Notre Dame. It's not, some school that you're using as a bridge to get to another school. Brian Kelly didn't work out for him. Who knows if he'd still be at Notre Dame? I love this because you go to a Giants team. Listen, take a look at the teams who took over, notwithstanding your Bears and getting Ben Johnson. Take a look at the teams whose teams sucked. Mike Vrabel did it. But for the most part over history, when you take on a job like that, the Raiders, the Jets, you're going there. The Giants probably could have made the decision last year. You're going there to try and hope that they're patient enough for the first two or three years to fix it. What Vrabel's done and what Ben Johnson's done is not the norm. The norm on your little analytics card is you're going there to be on a team that's horseshit, all these draft picks. Can you develop them quickly because we don't have a lot of patience with you? You're basically taking on a losing you got to do something special to win, or in 3 years, they're going on to the next guy. At Notre Dame, it's almost like you got to be on crack to leave. You work your whole life to get to a historic job. Right. I've always said, and now they're paying the same amount of money in college as they do in the NFL. So you don't have the incentive to leave for more money. And I understand the rules and the recruiting can wear somebody out. He's young enough, just like the ball's not heavy for a running back, he's young enough to deal with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's 70 and I want to go into somebody's living room. So I'm not shocked because the character. Notre Dame wins this. It's a Giants loss or anybody else that wanted him. It's great for recruiting. Great for the fact that his ego didn't get in the way and I'm entertaining it and flirting with it and going back and forth for 2 weeks. I love the fact that he did it. If I'm at LSU, Notre Dame, Southern Cal, Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, I'm not leaving for an NFL job. Listen, 9 wins is a bad year for Georgia. You're going to a program that if you can get – look what Kellen Moore's going through. If it's not for Tyler Shipp coming in and shaking it up, they're possibly picking at the first one or two picks. So you start to take a look at what it means. Just sanity. Analytics would say keep your ass at Notre Dame. So with his character and the way he's coached up and who that university is – and what they get to control by not being in a conference, why the hell would you leave Notre Dame? And I would imagine that Marcus Freeman's going to be there as long as he wants to. And that Giants fix, although they've got good players, one's going to be coming off an injury, Jackson Dart. They're still a ways away, Segs.
Yeah.
Notre Dame will be in the national title. They'll be in the playoff next year. They just will. So as long as your ego, I mean, you hear people talking about it, it's great. I love the fact that Marcus Freeman did this. Absolutely love it. And I wouldn't leave Notre Dame either if I was him for the Giants job.
We talked
too much
about
dysfunction.
Yes.
Too much dysfunction.
We talked about the fact that the USC-Notre Dame rivalry is coming to an end. They'll probably pick it up in a few years, but they will not play the next 2 years at least. Your boy Lincoln Riley talked about it. And real quick, happened during the show, USC defensive coordinator Deonton Lynn is leaving to go to Penn State. So Lincoln Riley needs to find another defensive coordinator.
Which is such bad news for Trojans because our defense has gotten better the last couple of years. And
yeah.
We're getting better. And now losing this guy, got to redo it all over again. It's a good get by Penn State.
Yeah, so there'll be a hole there at USC. But Lincoln Riley talked about the fact that USC and Notre Dame won't be playing. Here's what he had to say.
You know, we've both worked for months to try to find a solution. Notre Dame was very vocal about the fact that they would play us anytime, anywhere. And obviously them not having a conference affiliation gives them an ability to be pretty flexible with their scheduling. We went back, Jen Cohen, our AD, went back to Notre Dame roughly a couple of weeks ago with a scenario and a proposal that would extend the series for the next 2 years. And we took Notre Dame at their word that they would play us anytime, anywhere. That proposal was rejected. Not only was it rejected, 5 minutes after we got the call, it was announced that they had scheduled another opponent, which I'll give them credit. That might be the fastest scheduling act in college football history.
So he's laying it to Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame will turn around and blame it on FC, saying they didn't want to play us at a certain time of year. Yet I get what Lincoln, and I'm not choosing side. As a Trojan, I get it. To me, it's just, again, adults in a room that couldn't do it, that the extremes both ways instead of meeting halfway to keep what is one of the five best rivalries in sports, national rivalries we have, period, in any sport. It just is. Yankees, Red Sox, Michigan, Ohio State, SC, Army, Navy, SC, Notre Dame. It just is. Over the course of time, some of the best games and some of the greatest players have played in this rivalry. That with it, the SC is going to lean that it's towards it's Notre Dame's problem, and Notre Dame's going to lean towards, well, we tried to do this, but I understand Lincoln Riley, anytime, anywhere means you'll play him in October, you'll play him in November, you'll play him in September, you'll play him in August, and hell, you play him at a neutral site. That's how I take this. And Notre Dame, you know, obviously with not being in the way they can schedule it, but it also tells me that when the BYU thing came down, the most telling part of this whole thing for me, not to whose fault, when something like this happens, Segs, like when Texas and Texas A&M were fighting over there, losing their rivalry for all that time, I didn't look at one or the other. It's like, it's all you guys. It's grown people that can't sit in a room and get it done. It's not, it can't be 100% one way. It just can't. If it is, then we need to get better leaders.
Right.
We'll leave it at that. So with this though, when you can negotiate in like 8 seconds and you already have another schedule, it's like free agency in pro sports. He signed a $200 million contract at 12:03 a.m. Man, $200 million. We all need to be able to negotiate that kind of money that quickly. It tells me that BYU, once this started years ago, BYU and Notre Dame got together and say, if this doesn't work, let's play this. Mutual respect, two church schools. Let's get this together. We're both playoff caliber teams every year. Let's do this, because you don't sign that deal that quickly unless you've already had that deal sitting on a piece of paper without dates and signatures on it. And you and I both know it. Both schools are wrong. My alma mater should have been better in this. Notre Dame should have been better. It's a farce and an embarrassment for both institutions that they're not playing this rivalry. Shame on both, period.
Well, and also remember, BYU was an independent there for what, 10, 11
years? That's exactly right, for the longest time.
Because
they didn't want it to play on Sundays or do all that too, because if it's a church school and obeying the Sabbath and all, and I get it, but they caught a lot of flack for years, Segs. Even going back to when they won the national title, what was it, 84 with Bosco? Caught a lot of, I think it was 84 with Bosco, Robbie, and that group. They took a lot of flack for, well, they don't have to play certain teams in conference, and Notre Dame's going through what BYU had gone through for the longest time, and they got this done. You don't negotiate contracts that are that important in 5 minutes. You just don't do it. So there you go. Lincoln does make a great point there. Both schools should be ashamed of themselves for letting this happen.
Yes, for sure. All right, before we get out of here, we'll do our bet of the day. Got an interesting game, Rams at Falcons tonight on Monday Night Football. Falcons a 7-point favorite on the road. 49.5 is the over-under. But more so looking at the playoffs, this is
You know, Falcons are favored, you said? You mean the Rams are favored?
I meant Rams are favored by seven, yeah, on the road. Rams sit at 11-4. We got the Niners at 12-4 now, sitting right in front of them at the 5 seed. It's going to be interesting to see how things wrap up here, because currently the Rams would have to go to Philly to play the Eagles in the first round of the playoffs, which is a team that we, for most of the season, had as probably the best team in football, or the most dangerous team in football when it comes to the playoffs. That's a tough start to the playoffs if you're the Rams, to travel cross country to probably a cold, windy, possibly snowy game that you're not playing indoors, and you got to face the reigning Super Bowl champs. So this is a big game for the Rams to continue to get more wins, to try and maybe get to the 5 seed and maybe play the winner of the NFC South, Bucks or the Panthers.
Why would I sell out to win this game? I'm not saying you go out and go through the money. If you're the Rams, what's the advantage of winning the game? Aside from your enhancing MVP awards, you're putting up numbers. What's the Rams' advantage? I know you tell me, Sigs, if you're the Rams, aside from a winning, you want to keep winning. I get all that.
Yeah.
But what's today have to do with them? I mean, winning this game, what's the advantage for them?
To me, it's just kind of what I was just saying, the fact that you're trying to get to that 5 seed so you can face either the Panthers or the Bucks. You don't want to have to go to Philly. I'd rather go to Tampa or Carolina. Yeah, you got to travel cross country, but neither of those teams are very good right now. They're going to be.
No, I would take my chances in a warm weather place over that. Yeah, no doubt.
You're wanting to get there because you're going to have, you know, if the Niners lose, you win and then win next week. I think they play Arizona, the Rams do. And then you have the Seattle Seahawks and 49ers playing for the 1 seed. If the Niners lose that, they have a worse record. And then you get that 5 seed. Niners fall to 6, and they have to go to Philly. You get to go play either the Bucks or the Panthers.
What if the Rams lose 2 games in a row? What happens if the Rams lose these next 2?
It does not matter. They don't move.
That's right. So the question is, you, and if they win the next 2, they end up being where you're talking about. And so rhetorical wise, they're going to play to win, but are you like, I don't think Davante Adams, they're sitting him out. I think right. Sitting him out. I don't ever like long times off of playing my best. And I hate it. I just hate it. And I understand, listen, you got to play them all, but I'd much rather play somebody that I feel good about beating than going to Philly in round 1 is my point.
Yeah.
And I think that's your point as well. Yeah. While I respect Tampa and I respect Carolina, let's face facts. There's a little less intimidation, and not only in the venue you got to go play in, but the team you're playing. The Rams would be a touchdown plus favorite against either one of those teams. They will be an underdog in Philadelphia. Not that that matters to them betting wise. You just have more chance to stay healthy and move through it. You play to win them, as Herman Edwards said, but you also play for the confidence going through. And no matter what happens, if they're not moving out of the slot, if they lose, was my point at the beginning, then why wouldn't you go play to win them?
Yeah.
Right? And you're not going to win the division. So that's decided, what, next week by the 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. So, but what I do want to do is win this game without putting a couple players in harm's way. Does that make sense? Do want to do that. But I don't like the, we'll deal with what. The Rams aren't good enough to coast the next 2 weeks and then turn it on in the playoffs. They're really good, but we've seen them lose games late. They also need to get themselves feeling good into the postseason, because I trust feeling good. Even if they had to go to Philly, I trust that they can win. It'll be a much harder path to get to the next round being in Philly than it will be being in Carolina or Tampa. Even though Carolina and Tampa may want to argue with us, Carolina and Tampa are not the Philadelphia Eagles at home. They're just not.
Let me ask you this real quick before we make our bets, and then we'll get out of here. If you're the Rams, let's say you get to that 5 seed, or you're kind of picking and choosing. Would you rather be the 5 seed, get to play Carolina, Tampa, you win? Then let's say most likely you'd be going to play either San Francisco or Seattle, a division rival that you know very well. Or would you rather sit, let's say you beat Philly, and then you're going to Chicago, a team you haven't played. You're probably going to another cold weather game.
Oh, you are.
Rather face a team that you know or a team that you haven't played and possibly playing in another cold weather game. Which way would you be looking at it if you're the Rams?
Team I know, familiarity. Okay. And think about this. And I know people say, a lot of times the unknown creates anxiety and stress and difficulty putting. And in truth, of those teams, and I know Brock Purdy's good from the pocket and underrated athleticism. I know that Sam Darnold's got better, far better. He's a far better arm talent than Brock Purdy.
Yes.
But both similar in the fact that they're not going to dominate you with their legs, but they're good enough to extend plays. And both are really good players around them, throw the ball on time, all that. And both are probably better pure quarterbacks at this stage with experience than Caleb Williams. But the Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, oh my gosh, he's capable of having one of those halves where it's like, oh, hell no. I think that concerns you. And Chicago's a tough place to play, Segs. I played there a million times. It's a tough place to play at that time of year. And I'll tell you what else, another familiarity allows you to get what you want to do quicker because it's not like the 49ers and Seahawks and Rams are going to shit can everything they've done and put a whole new game. They're going to go with what's successful with a few changes. So you get to spend your time, practice time, not mulling over. Damn, I got to come up with a whole new plan. And lastly, Rams and 49ers, who's been dominant in that Rams. As far as who is Sam Darnold struggled? Now, I understand what happened late last one, but for the most part, going into that 1-4, the Rams have given Sam Darnold fits, and they did in that game until they came back and won it, and the Rams couldn't close it out. So if I'm Robert Saleh, I'm saying I feel good about the way – and Saleh's the defensive coach, but Kyle Shanahan. And then it comes down to this. Kyle Shanahan has to prove in game situations and pressure those situations in the playoffs, and he's got the Super Bowl again, that he can close out that one moment in the fourth quarter like the Super Bowl with Garoppolo, playoffs on the road, that he – because the question about Kyle Shanahan is, can he win that single elimination game on the line when it's closer with a lead, when it's go home or win? Not just the playoffs. I'm talking about that Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So getting into the playoffs, he's got to treat it like that. And I do think he's the NFC Coach of the Year considering, and I know that it's just the Coach of the Year. I do think that he is, considering what he's had to coach through, it's been a phenomenal year for them. It really has. We keep forgetting, guys, remember, Mac Jones started, four or five games, three games, whatever it was. You had to have him kind of like what Davis Mills did for the Texans to keep them afloat. But Shanahan's done a hell of a job. If I'm the Rams, my familiarity and the way I've handled those two teams, just game plan alone would make me want to play one of those two. Plus, the trip's not far, Segs. Yep. It's a shorter trip. And I know that some that doesn't matter. It does matter. It's like home cooking. You feel a little more cozy there, and they can go in and beat either team. If I'm the Rams, you'll say you'll play anybody. Familiarity matters more to me. Listen, when I know the strength of a team, I also know the weakness of them. And when I know, it's like your friends. Keep your friends close. Your enemies close. You know, the friends and enemies thing. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. Right. It's the same thing here. Friends, but you got to treat them. They're the enemy, but they're your friend. You're familiar with them, so you know all their habits and what they're trying to do. I would think that the Rams, if it was me as a coach, I'm pretty confident knowing I can handle both of those teams and know how to handle them, even though they're both capable of rolling on and winning a Super Bowl. That NFC West got three legit Super Bowl contenders.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a chance that the Rams have to go on the road all three games to get to the Super Bowl. I mean,
we've seen teams do it. Green Bay did that. Green Bay did that with about 10 guys on IR when Aaron Rodgers won his Super Bowl. I think they were 9-7. They were banged up. Went bingo, bango, bongo, championship. It can happen. We've seen this movie before by other teams.
All right, Rams -7, 49.5. I'm going Rams in the over. I think the Rams come out and just kind of make a quick statement early, get out there, score. Atlanta's, you know, they're in that mode of let's just get out of here. Let's just, you know. Get the season over with, you know, they're looking ahead. What am I going to do after the season? You know, where do I get to go? What's the vacation? What I think the Rams come out and Stafford and Puka and company kind of explode early and then just kind of coast in the second half to a big win.
I think what they're going to want to do, Segs, you'll see quickly what their mindset is. They come out and want to get out early. I think they'd like to have a comfortable lead so they didn't have to play their guys in the fourth quarter. That's how you get a – that's how you work in rest at this time of the season but still serious about winning games. I think they'd like to start fast. Hey, make sure Bijan Robinson doesn't take over the game and you'll be able to defend them. Cousins is a good player. They've got good players. But the Rams – I'd take the Rams in the over. If I was had to bet one or the other, I would take the over in the game, say, because I think there'll be a lot of points.
Yeah.
But I think the Falcons may get a couple late scores maybe to get close to covering. But I would take the Rams and the over in this game. And I think a fast start by the Rams would say, okay, Puka, you got your 9 catches. Stafford, you've done your thing to continue. It's the fourth quarter. We're up by 17. One more series and get out. That's the way I think that Sean McVay would like this.
Yeah. All right, well, that'll do it for today's show. Go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. We got more NFL to talk about. We're going to talk about your Raiders and everything going on there and kind of let you go more off on the whole, should Pete Carroll stay or not? And I think there's that's a big examination sense. Coming. Oh, they're pathetic.
They've gotten worse. They get worse every week. I know they came back and made it clear, but I'm talking about as an overall whole. I don't even feel like I'm watching pro football when I watch the Raiders. It's a hard watch.
It's the same thing like with the Jets.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Jets, how do you not have a fucking interception all year? You don't have one. Ball did not get tipped up and just lucky once. I mean, some are going to call it luck, but a lot of that's just bad talent that you have.
You fall into an interception if you're in the right position sometimes. They're just bad talent, bad football team, and it's a bummer for Aaron Glenn. It's a bummer for Pete Carroll, but we ask them just like we do our players, get better even if you're not winning. Neither franchise got better this year. They were better off last year, and that's saying something. Really is.
That really is saying something. So, all right, we'll be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Be talking more football. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
I'm Paige, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.